This week on Potlatch, Martha Teluk and Eliza Jones on education, Roger Lang on cross-cultural cooperation, and some songs of Buffy St. Marie. Potlatch, a program about Alaska Natives for Alaska Natives. We could not bring Buffy St. Marie to our Fairbanks studio to record her songs for you, but we do have records of some of the songs she sang in Anchorage during the Tundra Times banquet. Songs such as My Country, Tis of Thy People, You're Dying.
Now that your big eyes are finally opened, now that you're wondering how must they feel, meaning them that you've chased across America's movie screens. Now that you're wondering how can it be real that the ones you've called colorful, noble and proud in your school propaganda, they starve in their splendor. You've asked for my comment, I simply will render. My country, 'tis of thy people you're dying. Now that the longhouses breed superstition, you force us to send our toddlers away to your schools where they're taught to despise their traditions, forbid them their languages, then further say that American history really began when Columbus set sail out of Europe, and stress that the nation of leeches that's conquered this land are the biggest and bravest and boldest and best. And yet where in your history books is the tale of the genocide basic to this country's birth, of the preachers who lied, how the Bill of Rights failed, how a nation of patriots returned to their earth? And where will it tell of the Liberty Bell as it rang with a flood over Kinsoa mud, and a brave Uncle Sam in Alaska this year? My country, 'tis of thy people you're dying. Hear how the bargain was made for the West with her shivering children in 0 degrees. Blankets for your land, so the treaties attest. Oh, well, blankets for land is a bargain indeed. And the blankets were those Uncle Sam had collected from smallpox disease, dying soldiers that day. And the tribes were wiped out, and the history books censored. 100 years of your statesmen have felt it's better this way. Yet a few of the conquered have somehow survived. Their blood runs the redder, though genes have been paled. From the Grand Canyon's caverns to Craven's sad hills, the wounded, the losers, the robbed sing their tale. From Los Angeles County to upstate New York, the white nation fattens while others grow lean. Oh, the tricked and evicted, they know what I mean. My country, 'tis of thy people you're dying. The past, it just crumbled, the future just threatens. Our lifeblood shut up, in your chemical tanks. And now here you come, bill of sale in your hand, and surprise in your eyes that we're lacking in thanks for the blessings of civilization you've brought us, the lessons you've taught us, the ruin you've wrought us. Oh, see what our trust in America's bought us. My country, 'tis of thy people you're dying. Now that the pride of the sires receives charity, now that we're harmless and safe behind laws, now that my life's to be known as your heritage, now that even the graves have been robbed, now that our own chosen way is a novelty, hands on our hearts, we salute you, your victory. Choke on your blue, white, and scarlet hypocrisy, pitying the blindness that you've never seen, that the eagles of war whose wings lent you glory, they were never no more than carrion crows. Push the wrens from their nest, stole their eggs, changed their story. The mockingbird sings it, it's all that she knows. Ah, what can I do? Say a powerless few with a lump in your throat and a tear in your eye. Can't you see that their poverty's profiting you? My country, 'tis of thy people you're dying.
We'll hear another Buffy St. Marie selection later. A short time ago, I discussed education of Alaskan natives with two experts, Martha Teluk and Eliza Jones, both of whom are educators and Alaska natives. I asked Martha Teluk if teachers should train students for life in Western civilization or in Native civilization.
First, I'd like to know what type of school you're talking about. If you're talking about the school like in the urban areas in Anchorage and in Fairbanks, when children go to school in these conventional type schools, they are being taught to skills that would be used in an urban area, not really anything that you can use in the villages. If, let's see, okay, they're taught skills like you could use in an office, in a job. Of course, these things are happening now in the villages since the Land Claim Settlement Act passed. You know, we need people who can run businesses, corporations, and mayors, and know about the law and that type of thing. But I think we need a little bit something, something that's closer to the native type of living, because in the villages our type of living is a mixture of both now, the non-native and native culture are becoming assimilated, but it still should not ignore the lifestyles and the cultures of the natives, and this is being done in the schools. It's being ignored. Of course, with the introduction of the Indian Education Act in the urban areas, this is including our native culture.
Does a native who has been in a white environment need training to readapt himself to a native culture?
If a person is very strong in his own self-image, you know, if he has confidence in himself as a person, and he has deep-seated feelings about himself as being good, as being well-liked and respected, and he respects himself for himself the way he is, an educated native. I don't think he'll come into any kind of problem. I think the problem is encountered when he is acculturated into a non-native culture, and then he goes back and he has a different image of himself. It is not native anymore. Maybe he's kind of mixed that. He thinks non-native, and he thinks his native ways are not that good anymore. And I think the reason for this is because in the first place, he didn't have a very good self-image of himself. This is only my personal opinion.
Should schools train people for jobs or for coping with psychological problems of modern life?
You can't really train a person to think psychologically well about himself. This comes in very, very early from his parents and the attitude of his parents towards other ethnic groups or people who are not like they are. And also from his own attitudes towards himself, which are formed early in life, you know. If he has a nice childhood and his parents are respect themselves as natives or non-natives or whatever they are, I think that strength will continue. His psychological makeup will continue all through his life and nothing can alter it.
I asked where students should go to high school, in their own villages or in larger cities where they may enjoy better facilities. Eliza Jones of Huslia commented first.
That's kind of a tough question because on the one hand, it's really psychologically it's really good that they're trying to have higher education close to home, because then the children could learn to live in the bush and live with the family and that sort of thing. But at the same time, they don't have all the things in the village that they need to know if they're going to, you know, work in the city or whatever. And sometimes it's good, I think, for the students to go to a bigger city. And maybe some of the students could probably take it, and some, I think it's, you know, it's really hard for them, especially if they've never been away from home before. I know some kids who went to Mount Edgecum and some other schools, and when they come home in the spring, they always talk about, you know, how hard it was, you know, being away from home, and that they'd do things like, you know, they were trying to get kicked out of school, and they'd, you know, do a whole bunch of things they know they were not supposed to do, and they'd put them on restriction. But this one particular student that I talked to said she never ever got expelled, but she spent a lot of time in the dorm being, restricted. And she said there was a lot of the students got depressed, and I think there were some suicides too. You know, some of them got, you know, so depressed, especially if they don't hear from home and stuff. That kind of thing is really bad. It's hard to say what is better. It's, you know, on the other hand, it's good for students to go out, I think, and go to a city and maybe go to live among other people other than just the native people in the village. You know, I think they'd have to get along, learn to get along with in urban areas. But I can't say which is good and which is bad. Both has good and good has bad things. But
well, my opinion is that in a way, just having our children exposed to only their own type of people is kind of restricting their education. But also, on the other hand, it's good because they have the support psychologically, socially, and otherwise of their parents. But at the same time, we should not forget that they need to be exposed to the other culture that they are going to be exposed to later on. I think I would like very much to see an exchange type of student thing going on in the regional high schools, where some of the students can come to the city and live with families. Some of the non-native students can go to the villages and live with native families. And that way, you know, there'll be intercultural exchange. That is very, very important, because our native culture is now no longer a full native culture. There's so much of the Western culture in it that we need to have it integrated into our education all the time. We cannot keep it out.
I asked each lady to comment on the Jay Hammond plan for financing education. Hammond suggested that the state pay 100% of the cost of education. Each community then would share in the funds according to the number of students. Then each community would decide how to spend its share of the education funds. Eliza Jones commenting first.
Well, it sounds good, but, you know, it's, you have to know more about the thing before you could say, yes, it's a good thing. It sounds good that if it's, you know, if it's going to have local input, the people are going to decide what they, how they want to have their students educated.
I think, to me, it sounds good, too, because the natives can really plan their own program, run their own program, and have a lot of native input into it. But again, I think no amount of money can take the place of good quality educators who are really concerned about teaching children well, you know. The quality of education doesn't come in amounts of dollars and cents. You cannot measure it like that.
This is John Sackett, president of Doyon Limited and the state senator from Interior Alaska. There is a program called Potlatch, and the intent of the program is to receive the ideas and the comments from the village people as to exactly what they would like to hear on a radio program. I would request that any of the people in the villages that have anything specific that they would like to hear, such as native songs, ancient stories, programs that are going on today in terms of the total native movement, to please let KYC know as soon as possible that they can be aired on the radio out to the villages. The address is KUAC, University of Alaska, Fairbanks, Alaska.
Hey, I'm going to gal at the head of the creek, and I'm going up to see you about two times a week. Kisses around the mouth, just as sweet as any vine. Wrap myself around me like a sweet potato vine. Going up Cripple Creek, going on a run. Going up Cripple Creek, have a little fun. Going up Cripple Creek, going in a whirl. Going up Cripple Creek, see my girl. About half grown, jump on a boy like a dog on a bone. Roll my britches up to my knees, I'm gonna wade over Cripple Creek whenever I please. Going up Cripple Creek, going on a run. Going up Cripple Creek, have a little fun. Going up Cripple Creek, going in a whirl. Going up Cripple Creek, see my girl. Gonna wait, oh, Cripple Creek, whenever I sleep. Hills are steep and the roads are muddy, and I'm so drunk that I can't stand steady. I'm going up Cripple Creek, going on a run. Going up Cripple Creek, have a little fun. Going up Cripple Creek, going in a whirl. Going up Cripple Creek, see my girl.
When Buffy St. Marie sang at the Tundra Times banquet, in the audience was Roger Lang, president of the Alaska Federation of Natives. In an interview with us recently, Lang explained why Alaska natives who get land claims payments can be eligible for food stamps, too.
Oh, the answer is simple on that question. The funds and the benefits that are paid and accrue to natives because of land claims are for a settlement for the land that they have given up in establishing their right to benefits and lands from the claims. As such, when Congress made this determination, they also said that because the claim settlement is exactly that, that it ought not to detract from any federal program now in existence. They specifically exempted the income from IRS. By administrative rulings, we have had it exempted from the Family Assistance Program, Aid to Dependent Children, and Aid to the Blind. That's why it doesn't count.
Next, Lang justified preferential treatment in social services like those offered by the Bureau of Indian Affairs and the Public Health Service.
That's another question. Generally, the question is couched a little stronger than that. Why should I pay taxes so natives could have schools and could have hospitals at no cost to them? My answer always is that we have paid our taxes. We started with Plymouth Rock giving up an inch of land, and we haven't quit yet. We've paid property taxes far in excess of any value for services we've gotten. The other thing is that simply the only reason there is a BIA school in the state of Alaska is because the state has not met its constitutional requirement of providing educational facilities and services to all of its citizens. Because of geography, location, and size, we don't have state schools or state-operated schools in those areas.
When do non-natives cooperate well with natives?
They probably cooperate the best in the world of finance, especially since December 18th last year, when $137 million was given to regional corporations, to village corporations, and individual natives because of the first cumulative 3 years of payment. Just less than 2 weeks ago, there was another payment of $70 million. So the financial world is cooperating the best with us, and because it's of mutual benefit to everyone.
When do non-natives cooperate poorly?
Well, there's a system or a bureaucracy to protect. Much more than there is a need to meet the wants and desires of citizens. We run into this in the areas where agencies of both federal government and, in instances, state government are going to have to give up land. They're well able to deed lands, lease lands, to let permit lands go, to contract for resources, but they don't know how to give up land, and those people have a heck of a time cooperating. But it's working out. Administratively, we're making some waves. And another area I find that maybe not so much a lack of cooperation, but a lack or an inability to change. And that's in the educational systems in the state of Alaska from Head Start through the university level.
Does poor non-native cooperation result from attitude, prejudice, or personal interests?
It's probably a combination of all three. And there are, beyond the preservation of systems and bureaucracies and other things, a fear of the change of what's happening in Alaska. The development of resources is leading to an influx of new citizens. The deeding of 40 million acres to Alaska Natives portends a vast and radical change in both the development of resources, access to that resource, finances, and an ability to determine for themselves different areas, communication, transportation, delivery of goods and services, so that all of these, when we talk about those changes, illustrate that old systems that now are in existence perhaps won't be there too much longer. That's probably where the lack of cooperation comes in the hardest.
Lang discussed with Levi Lott what natives have to offer non-natives.
One thing is survival. The other thing is that, you know, the culture I'm most familiar with, of course, is that relating to Southeast Alaska. And it was a beautiful culture. It was a total culture. It had song, it had art, it had history. It didn't have jails, it didn't have welfare, it didn't have orphans, and it didn't have widows. Everybody in that system got taken care of, and everybody knew how it was going to happen and who was going to do it. I think probably the best thing that we could contribute to the Western culture is the simple fact is that there are no degrees of crime. You know, when you kill a guy, it's not first, second, and third degree murder. It's just something else that results in a dead man. And
like how to live together.
Like how to live together, probably. And how to live on the land and with the environment without attempting to conquer them.
Tall trees in Georgia, they grow so high, they shade me so. And sadly walking through the thicket I go. The sweetest love I ever had, I left aside because I did not want to be any man's bride. My parents took me wherever I traveled. I traveled west and north and east and south. When I grew older and married I would be, I found my sweetheart, he would not marry me. When I was younger, they came around, but now I'm older and they're all settled down. Young girls take warning and don't complain and don't make moan, for if you're mind, my girl, and give your heart to one. For if you love all men, you'll sure be left with none. And if perfection were to be found in mortal men, we'd soon grow tired and go off alone again. Tall trees in Georgia, they grow so high, they shade. I'm sadly walking through the thicket of
Potlatch, produced in the studios of KUAC in College in cooperation with KTOO Juneau, KOTZ Kotzebue, and KYUK Bethel, under Title I of the Higher Education Act.